This KFK podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. Honesty, integrity, hard work. It's the way you live and the way we bank. Bank of Colorado has been a family-owned, community-focused bank for generations and will be here for generations to come. Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.
News story.
I don't know if this is the kind of hard-hitting news you're used to.
Got some good news and I got some bad news.
Now this could be the big story of the summer. Network is going to be wanting plenty of coverage.
What do you mean, silly? I mean, that's real news.
All right, Mike, Bo Nix is not the only one, is not the only quarterback dealing with some injury issues. With one day until their first practice for the Super Bowl, the Patriots said quarterback Drake May wouldn't have been a full participant had they practiced Wednesday because of his banged up right shoulder. Both New England and Seattle were required to submit projected injury reports Wednesday ahead of Thursday's first practice. I doubt that's anything, but if the Super Bowl were this weekend, maybe that would actually be a case, but I don't think that's anything to be concerned about.
So this may be a problem for the Super Bowl.
No, come on. You were doing so good, man. You were doing great. You were doing fantastic. And now this. Josh Allen was, we knew he was hurt before the Broncos-Bills game. That had been reported, Mike, that he was a little banged up. Well, they've got, they had the Joe Brady first press conference as the introduction as the next head coach for the Bills. Josh Allen, got the picture right in front of me. He's in a boot. Looks like his right foot, and he's in crutches. So, yeah, guys get banged up. It is a tough gig. And it's probably more, you know, speaking more to our conversation about Bo, these guys are all getting knocked around. These guys are all in a cast or a walking boot or moving around on crutches at some point, especially as we end the season. So, Josh Allen, kind of banged up, sounds like. Yeah, yeah.
His emotions are in a boot, too.
Is that even a thing? Like, that's a saying?
Well, he was very sad after the Broncos beat him.
Okay. That's what you want to go with? That's what you want to go with that one. Tom Brady joined the chorus of many voices in the sports world that were frustrated with Bill Belichick's snub from the Pro Football Hall of Fame, saying the voting committee's decision is completely ridiculous. He voiced his opinion on the news during an interview with a Seattle sports 710. That's not our guy, Mr. Millen, is it? I don't think so. But we've had him on a lot. Wonder if they chatted with Tom Brady about that. Interesting. So Brady voicing his opinion, he said, "I don't understand it. I mean, I was with him every day. If he's not a first ballot Hall of Famer, there's really no coach that should ever be a first ballot Hall of Famer, which is completely ridiculous because people deserve it." Bill Polian is in the news, too. Bill Polian, of course, he was a Patriots rival for a long time. He was with the Bills and the Colts back in the day. I think he was with the Colts as their GM when all the gates were going on. When the bounty gates and spy gates and deflate gates. I cannot do it. The gates are confusing to me. So there is a belief that former Indianapolis Colts team president Bill Polian was outright lobbying for Belichick to not get in, citing the franchise's Spygate and Deflategate cheating scandals as the primary reason why. Now, I read a report, and Michael, can you confirm this for me? I read a report this morning that Bill Polian voted for Bill Belichick to get in. Maybe you can find that out for me while we sit here. if that's actually legitimate. But there was a voter who spoke on the condition of an anonymity. I have a hard time with that one, too. And some of the things this voter had to say, kind of fascinating, said that Polian, an ardent Kraft supporter and former general manager of the Bills and the Colts and Patriots' chief rival during their dynasty, told some voters he believed Belichick should wait a year before induction as a penance for Spygate, the 2007 cheating scandal that cost the team a first-round draft pick. Commissioner Roger Goodell also fined Belichick $500,000 and the Patriots $250,000. So there's been a lot of talk about Polian being the one that perhaps tried to rally people up and get them to go against putting Bill Belichick in. The NFL Hall of Fame sent out a press release yesterday. The Pro Football Hall of Fame understands and respects the passionate reaction of many fans, media members, and enshrines the hall itself in light of published reports regarding the voting results for the class of 26. It's that very passion that propels the game. The Hall also respects the members of the selection committee when they follow the selection process bylaws. It's an honor to serve as a selector. Each year, the Hall reviews the selection process and the composition of the 50-person selection committee. If it is determined that any members violated the selection process bylaws, they understand action will be taken. That could include possibility that such selectors would not remain a member of the committee moving forward. The selection of a new class is the most important duty of the Hall of Fame oversees each year, and the integrity of that process cannot be in question. Is that about Bill Polian? I am curious. What'd you find, Mike? What'd you find back there, buddy?
I found an interview, but it has no audio for some reason. He said that he did vote.
So if he voted for him, was he trying to get other people to not vote for him? But he doesn't have to say he's the bad guy in all this. And
all right, I think I got it.
You got it? All right, let's go.
It would be very easy for me to say what you've shared with us and to kind of clear the air, but best to just ask you to share the facts of everything that's gone on in your words, how we got here, and exactly what your vote was about Bill Belichick.
All right, thank you. I wrote this out, so I'm reading from the statement. I voted for Coach Belichick in the Hall of Fame selection meeting. The Pro Football Hall of Fame has confirmed that fact through the auditors of the selection process. Again, I'll state that I never said that I believe that Coach Belichick should, quote, wait a year, close quote, for enshrinement. This has been confirmed by the Pro Football Hall of Fame, numerous selectors who are in the room, and my vote for Coach Belichick. As a Hall of Fame member and selector, I realize the import of what we do. I've always tried, as a selector, to make these difficult choices with the utmost of objectivity. I've said on SiriusXM Radio and numerous other media outlets that I believe Coach Belichick to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. My vote confirms that.
Very good. Okay, so I take him as a word. He voted for Bill Belichick to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. So who is the person? This is according to CBSSports.com, Michael, that there was an anonymous voter said that Polian was told some voters he believed Belichick should wait a year before induction as penance for Spygate. Polian saying he did not do any of that.
I mean, maybe he said that like, oh, I think he should wait a year, but then
maybe
voted
he
for
said it.
It
in a conversation of, hey, I mean, as we're weighing this, but I don't know that are they able to sit and talk as they vote? I think they come together. I don't think it's something where they're talking to each other. Go Pokes, I already saw that. You're being trolled. Ryan Leaf is not a Hall of Fame voter. It is funny, though. He's being sarcastic. I wonder who the anonymous person is. Because I know we got a lot of distrust in the media world, but you know, CBS Sports, you're not just going to make up, hey, an anonymous voter came to us and said this. But they're accusing Bill Polian of telling some voters that he believed Belichick should wait a year before induction. Now, that would be a pretty low. Like, he wants to make sure, if it ever leaks out that he voted against Bill, it's a bad look. So he wants to make sure, I voted for him, but I did put a bug in everybody's ear that it wouldn't be a terrible idea to teach him a lesson and have him wait a year to get in. But just in case it leaks, people are going to assume it's Bill Polian, so I better vote for him. And if enough people... You know, and again, that's a tricky area, dangerous discussion. But allegedly there's an anonymous person that's a voter that said Bill Polian was trying to rally the troops. Not necessarily rally the troops, but told voters that he believed Belichick should wait a year.
I don't know. Like that's too conspiracy theory for me. If anything, putting myself in Bill Polian's shoes, if anything, it would be more like grumble, my opinion, but I got to put it.
Why would an anonymous voter, one of 50, make that up? What good could come of it?
I mean, maybe he saw that as lobbying rather than my opinion.
I didn't even think the voters were supposed to talk about it until, I guess maybe this is the time now. Maybe we're in that window now. But this is a weird thing, man. It's really odd that he's not a first ballot Hall of Famer. It makes the whole process look bad. I know he has a sketchy past, but he did so much, Mike, that overrides all of it, doesn't it? Everything that he's done, you can talk about Spygate. You can. Doesn't define him as a coach. I mean, they didn't win the Super Bowl that year, the Spygate year. So it continues to be an ongoing discussion that I think is just, it's bottom line, it's a bad look for an already weird Hall of Fame in my mind. To not have a dude that's been to, how many Super Bowls did he lose? Did he go to, he lost to the Giants twice and he lost to... Did he lose to the Eagles? So he went to the Super Bowl 9 times as a head coach. And he won 6 of those. And the whole, it was all Tom Brady. They were 11-9 with Matt Cassel. Or 11-5, sorry. 11-9. It's a lot of games. 11-5 with Matt Cassel as the starting quarterback. Let's see. First advantage text line is 888-530-0043. I lost it. It's gone. Oh, texter says, I'm pretty sure Bill Belichick doesn't care. Have you read the... Yeah, Bill Belichick does care. He's not happy. He's not... Have you read his comments about it? Yes, he's not thrilled. This isn't Nikola Jokic we're talking about. This is Bill Belichick. That guy absolutely... wants to have, and he'll forever have that, or won't have that, right? You only get one chance to be a full first ballot Hall of Famer. And enough voters thought Spygate was enough to keep him out. He'll get in next year, but as long as they continue to do the first ballot, second ballot thing, it does mean something. Not to me, I don't like it, but it does mean something. There is a difference between first ballot Hall of Famer. When we say Hall of Famer, and you're debating it with your friends at the bar, you say, is so-and-so a first ballot Hall of Famer? No, like second, third. That's dumb to me. But that's the discussion. And that will forever be gone for Bill Belichick. This is why I say get rid of the ballots so you can just go, is he a Hall of Famer or not? Well, next year he will be. Think about that. Like, the Hall of Fame is so jacked up that they wait. There's guys that played 50 years ago, Mike. And they're still, like, they come up in discussion. Oh, well, is he? And then they suddenly say, yeah, he is. And that is, you guys not understand, like, this is what I'm talking about when I'm going off on the Hall of Fame, is when you're saying, yeah, not this year. Oh, not next year. Maybe 30 years from now. Shanahan, is he a Hall of Famer? No. But for some, if he ever gets in, it will be decided at some point that he actually, oh yeah, you know it, he is. So why wasn't he a Hall of Famer 3 years ago? Why is he a Hall of Famer now? He hasn't done anything more. Once they become eligible, you either are or you aren't. And if they want to spread out the ceremonies, then do that. You could have one guy. You could have five guys. You could have 30 guys that you announce are in the Hall of Fame, being inducted in the Hall of Fame. And then you just say, but this year we're going to honor these five. And then this year we're going to honor these five. There's no reason for men to die or contributors to die before their name is put into the Hall of Fame. There's no reason for that. We can avoid that. I think that's despicable, to be honest. And then it's actually kind of worse in some ways to put them back in, to put them in the Hall of Fame after they passed. Yeah, he wasn't good enough then. But 32 years later, we decided he was good enough. Unfortunately, he does not get to enjoy that. This is why. As soon as they become eligible, you have your meeting, you do your vote, whatever. He's either a Hall of Famer or he's not. And then we're done with it. And I also think writers aren't going to be as bold if we mess with first ballot, second ballot, third ballot. They just go, yeah, I know. Well, I guess maybe, Michael, the counter to the argument is that if they don't have ballots and it's this year or bust, then do you start putting more people in? Because it's like, oh, well, he didn't get in. If he's not going to be in ever, so he's good enough to be. That's the thing. I think this is a strict thing. This is why I think you need to be strict on it. And bam, we just got to know right off. Maybe you limit it so they can't throw 450 guys in at once. But I get the reasoning behind the balloting thing, because if you think you've only got one shot to put a dude in, you might put more dudes in. Then you need to get pickier voters. 22 minutes after the hour. It's the whole show powered by Mosquito Joe. We're on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Organics Game of the Week on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
There's only one sound like the key tumbling the lock open for the first time. One feeling like finally seeing your place after you've emptied all the moving boxes. That moment when four walls and a roof become the home you've always wanted. If you're on the search for that special place, we're the community bank that'll help you get there. Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender.
This is Brian Howell, Colorado Buffalo's beat writer for the Buff Zone, and you are listening to The Whole Show on 1310 KFKA.
Minutes after the 12 o'clock hour. Last night was a rough one. Watching the Avs game, the end of the Avs game, and the Avalanche lose. And listen, a lot of people, like Coach Bednar, saying the Avs came out flat. I thought there was a lot of opportunities for the Avs to score in the third. So many, but just couldn't get it done. And this team's been kind of, they've been kind of rough after starting, after the historic start, 31-2-7, they have now, they've lost for the seventh time in 11 games. No Gabriel Landeskog, and I know that's not great for this team, so I'm finishing up the Avs game, and then I jump over 8:30 last night on FS1. You got to make a commitment to that if you're going to stay up and go through it, and man, that was a tough one to stay through. San Diego State beats Colorado State 73-50. You want an obvious answer as to why the Rams are losing? Against Utah State, they turned it over 21 times against San Diego State last night. They turned it over 17 times. And they missed a lot of threes. 8 of 30 from the three-point line, Michael. Just some really bad turnovers, too. There was one moment when I knew the turnover situation was already bad, but point guard Brandon Rechsteiner, he's inbounding the ball. And it was Augie Kadulis trying to get the ball from him so he could pass it in. He's running at Rechsteiner while he's on the other side of the out of bounds, getting ready to pass it in. He's going toward him, and like Rechsteiner just throws it at him when he's like an inch from him. And it bounced right off of him, goes out of bounds. Weird turnover, ugly turnover. Kyle Jorgensen was 1 of 6 from the three-point line last night. He had 5 points. Rashawn Bemba, 1 of 4. He had 2 points. That is, these are the two guys that there's no question, when they were out, things really got rough. And Bemba hasn't played a lot. But it was kind of like, wow, once Jorgensen went out, his team really struggled. Jorgensen was not a factor. He was not a factor last night. Outside of that three ball, which he only hit one, his back down game, his big man game, like that's just not working for him right now. Josh Pascarelli, who was kind of known as a sharp shooter at the beginning of the season, he was 2 of 6 from the three-point line. It just kind of is what it is right now. I don't see, you know, I had a texter earlier in the year say, oh, they're going to get rolling. They're going to get hot again. They're going to get like a Neat Clifford. Somebody's going to start stepping up like Neat Clifford. They don't have that guy on the team. You know, guys that they could maybe build around for the future, JoJo McIver, but he had 3 points last night. He looked rough. Defensively, he's not a bad player, though. And then Jorgensen, obviously. But there's just, I mean, 50 points, man. This is supposed to be a really good three-point shooting team, and you scored 50 points, and you turned it over. I mean, Ali Farokmanesh told Kevin Lytle in the Colorado, and like, yeah, if we turned over that much, 21 and 17, we're going to lose. We're not going to win. And San Diego State, that's always a good defense. Dutcher always has solid defense for the Aztecs. So he knew when you're watching film. On Colorado State, you know what you do? Hey, man, put pressure on them. They will turn it over. And that's exactly what the Aztecs did. They were full court pressing this team early. And they were relentless. They did not slow down. So, no, I don't see a magical run for Colorado State this year. They're 12-9 overall, but 3-7 in Mountain West play. Good news is Ali Farokmanesh is 33 years old, man. He's a really young coach. He's got a while where he can build this thing up. But unfortunately, this team is just not, you know, you look, the Utah State game really sucks because they were outplaying Utah State. They just had so many unforced turnovers. The Boise State game was close, but you had turnovers kind of not as bad, but in that game too. So it just, you know, now they go to Wyoming, and Wyoming's struggling. Wyoming's getting blown out by a lot of these top teams. I kind of thought Wyoming was turning things around. And I actually earlier said, I think Wyoming might beat CSU. Very well could happen. Because both teams do not look good right now. For CSU, they might find a way. They might win some games coming up. They got maybe Wyoming, maybe 50-50 there, flip of the coin. San Jose State, Air Force, Wyoming again, then at UNLV. Schedule kind of softens up a bit before it ramps back up when they take on San Diego State at the end of February. And you got Boise State in there too. But the Rams find themselves near the bottom of the barrel. The only teams they're better than at this stage is Wyoming, San Jose State, and Air Force. Air Force is 0-9 in the Mountain West Conference. Maybe my expectations were just too high, and I've discussed this before. I think, Nico Medved was fantastic, but I was the first one in line. Maybe I wasn't the first one to say it, but I was in that line saying, yeah, man, that sucks Nico's going, but you got your coach right there in Ali. He recruited a lot of these guys. Man, he looked frustrated last night, though. And, you know, I have a good relationship with Coach. He's a hell of a dude. But this team just doesn't look right. And I just don't see any kind of miraculous run happening this season. But you got to give him the time. You got to give him the time. You know, anyone freaking out right now, it sucks the season that we're in. You just don't have the dogs right now. You know, Kerry Booth has had his moments, but I watch him and he looks timid. I like Brandon Rechsteiner. He seems like a good ball handler, like too good of a ball handler to have four turnovers, but he somehow does, and some of those aren't always his fault, but it is what it is. You know, Jace Butler had four turnovers last night. They just don't really have a dog on this team, maybe. Like, who's that tough dog? Rex Steiner's the son of Scott Steiner, so you thought maybe it'd be, but you don't, typically you're not seeing your point guard as that guy. This, it just was a sloppy effort by this team overall. Ali told Kevin in the Colorado one, I think we've proven we can play against some of the best teams and we're a good offensive team. It really comes down to us taking care of the ball. I really did think we moved the ball better than we have recently. They did. They were getting open shots. You just couldn't hit anything. And when you pair that with turning it over every 5 seconds, that's a recipe for disaster. Now, they were shorthanded without Jorgensen and Memba. I get that, but you get both those guys back in last night, and I think they're fully healthy as you can be. They were a non-factor overall. So, yeah, Colorado State's in a tough spot, 36 minutes after the hour. We'll get more on that. And we got a full roster picture, too, of Colorado State football. And we'll take a look at that later on with Kevin. We got Rams Weekly coming up today at 2 o'clock. All that and more coming up. But first, Michael, let's jump out and get the latest on the local sports flash.
This is Chris Abshire, Fort Collins, Colorado, and you are listening to the whole show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
/12:41 the time. Welcome back into the whole show. We're live from the Aloe Fiber Studios, and coming up tonight, a familiar face will visit Ball Arena as the Denver Nuggets get set to take on the Brooklyn Nets. And Michael Porter Jr. has been a topic of conversation a lot for this, for, you know, people regretting the trade that went down, how everything looked there, should have never traded him. I mean, he's averaging 25.2 points per game. Certainly his career average. He's the team's leading scorer. The team that is 12-33. Guys, when you listen to the program and we tell you this is what it's going to look like, Denver's going to get Cam Johnson out of this and they're going to get a handful of other guys that they can go afford. None of those guys are going to average what Michael Porter Jr. does with Brooklyn. And it will still be a great trade. MPJ is going to go to Brooklyn, and he's going to be the only guy on that team that does anything. The Nuggets are going to get a bunch of really good players that help not only your starting lineup, but help your depth. Now you can argue that Michael Porter Jr., Cam Johnson, who's better? Yeah, Cam wasn't great when he was healthy so far for Denver, and then he got hurt, and we haven't been able to get much further in that. We haven't been able to really evaluate Cam. But even when Cam comes back and he's fully healthy and he starts playing well, he's not going to be averaging 25 points a game. Like, it is, you guys, sometimes you just look at the box scores. You just look at the stats. And that's not the way to do it with this deal. We knew that you needed to move Michael Porter Jr.'s contract because you were going to consistently, year in and year out, in the playoffs, you're going to have four, maybe five really good players. And then you're going to have nobody else. Think about this. That trade last year, when you looked at the playoffs, just look at the playoffs. and the numbers there and how deep they were really able to go. Let me just take a random game. May 11th against the OKC Thunder. This is your lineup. Aaron Gordon, Michael Porter Jr., Joker, Jamal Murray, Christian Brown. Oh, yeah, they're all pretty good. Your reserves, Russell Westbrook, Julian Strother, and Peyton Watson. You didn't play Dario Saric. You didn't play Zeke Nagy. Chanchar didn't play, barely. I mean, you had DeAndre Jordan, Jalen Pickett. And Jalen Pickett's gotten a lot better. But because of the trade for Michael Porter Jr., your minutes in the playoffs are going to look more like this. Jamal Murray, Christian Brown, Cam Johnson, Aaron Gordon, and Nikola Jokic. With Tim Hardaway Jr., better than all of the other, better than Westbrook at this stage in his career, I would say, yeah. Certainly better than the rest. Jalen Pickett's a much improved player. Bruce Brown and Jonas Valanciunas. That is, the upgrade that you made off the bench is, it's black and white, man. It's the most obvious thing in the world, and yet some people look at 25 points per game and say, should have never traded Michael Porter Jr. He wouldn't be averaging 25. Now, maybe while Joker was out, he would have been averaging 25, but when they're fully healthy, MPJ is the, on any given night, the third or fourth option. Because most nights it's, well, all nights it's Joker. Most nights it's Jamal is second. And then some nights it was Aaron Gordon and some nights it was Michael Porter Jr. But at most nights it was Aaron Gordon over that, at the third guy, because he was also rebounding like crazy and playing outstanding defense. Dude, I'm happy for MPJ. Like, that's a, he's a cool guy, says a lot, does a lot of weird podcasts, but says a lot. I loved him as a player here. Didn't love the contract. And when I say he didn't play up to his contract, Brooklyn might feel like he is. Good for him. But the way this roster is constructed, it doesn't really work for a sharpshooter to be a 25-point-a-night guy. A sharpshooter that doesn't play great defense. They just, I mean, anybody they've had. Tim Hardaway Jr. is a good three-point shooter. He ain't going to average 25, even if he started. This team is around Joker first, the two-man game with Joker and Jamal second, the miniature two-man game, although it's the big two-man game, between Joker and Gordon. That's the offense. A lot from that rim. Draw a straight line from the rim through the paint out to the three-point line. Those three guys are working right around those areas. Not to say you can't. That's why you do have MPJ, though, because once that starts to get crowded, you got to have guys that can hit outside shots. I loved the time he was here. MPJ will go down as a memorable Denver Nugget. A guy that was with you and was a big part of helping you win the Nuggets' first championship as an organization. So it's no disrespect. It's just this, anytime this is going to come up now, when it's Brooklyn and Denver or wherever MPJ is going, you're going to start talking about it. Wow, man, imagine if Porter was on this team right now. You'd have the same thing. You'd be locked in cap hell. You wouldn't have been able to re-sign Christian Brown, which some are like, whatever, but you wouldn't have been. Or Watson, if you're arguing the reverse, oh, we should have signed Watson. You wouldn't have been able to do that. You wouldn't have been able to bring in Jonas Valanciunas as a backup center, a true backup center. You would have been stuck with guys like DeAndre Jordan that are one foot in and 1 foot out, ready for retirement. Wouldn't have been able to bring Bruce Brown back or Tim Hardaway Jr., who's been a phenomenal resource for you. And Spencer Jones, whatever the Nuggets do, I'm assuming they're going to try to figure out a way to keep him on because he's only got like two or three games remaining on the two-way deal. You wouldn't even be able to entertain that because you were so deep inside that second apron that you couldn't do anything. I didn't think they could. I didn't think they would. I didn't think the offices of Tenzer and Wallace would be able to do this. They shocked the world and traded in MPJ. And when I first saw that, it wasn't like, Oh, wow. Thank goodness we got rid of that guy who's not very good. No, it was you got rid of it, the contract. Sometimes players, you can say, okay, well, man, we're spending so much money on that guy, we can't do anything. Well, sometimes they make it worth it, though, because on any given night, you see him throw up 30. Or like Joker. His contract keeps you from doing a lot. But when he's averaging what two other good players combined are averaging, yeah, that's fine. But when you're getting some nights of 15, some nights of 12, some nights of 20, not a lot of rebounding on a consistent night, damn sure not a lot of defense, it wasn't worth it. But good for him. He's doing exactly what we said he would do. He's shining. He's shining in Brooklyn, and he's the only one to do so. Denver, when healthy, could be one of the deepest teams as we get closer and closer to the playoffs. 12:49 the time, Michael. Let's take a quick break. We'll wrap up hour number two. Kevin Lytle will join us from the Fort Collins, Colorado, and we got buy or sell. All that and more coming up next on The Whole Show.
Fame Preps Talk. Listen to Coach Speak. Weekdays at 10 at Northern Colorado's Voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Hey, this is Mark Johnson, voice of the Colorado Buffaloes, and you're listening to The Hull Show with my buddy Brady Hull on 1310 KFKA.
All right, coming up, we'll get into a little buy or sell action for you. It's a big night. Big night for the Nuggets, just to beat Brooklyn and Michael Porter Jr., but the UNC Bears, Mike, they need a win in a big way. And I keep saying this team's too good to lose like this. At some point, I'm going to sound like an idiot. I still think this team is too good to be 1-7 in the Big Sky Conference. I don't feel the same way watching CSU. I watched that game last night. That team's not going to hang with four or five teams in the Mountain West. UNC's been hanging with everybody in the Big Sky. They're not getting blown out. Tonight, they got to put it together. They desperately need to stop the bleeding. Buy or sell coming up next. We'll be right back.
This KFK podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. Honesty, integrity, hard work. It's the way you live and the way we bank. Bank of Colorado has been a family-owned, community-focused bank for generations and will be here for generations to come. Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.